Welcome to the Rand CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Rand CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Tarbell, and I'm excited to have our guest on today. But before we get started, we want to remind you that this show is sponsored by Rand Commercial Real Estate, a vertically integrated real estate investment and advisory firm providing opportunities to investors to create passive streams of income through real estate investing, as well as providing active investors with sourcing debt and equity across the board. So if you have any questions about funding your next deal, or if you'd like to partner through investing passively, please reach out to us at randcre.com. And today's guest, I have Ryan Smith, the founder of Elevation Capital Group, which they primarily focus on two niches, manufactured housing communities and storage facilities. They currently have over 475 million assets under management, 175 assets across 30 states. Welcome to the show, Ryan. How's everything going today?
It's going well. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Super excited to have you on. And before the call, we were discussing a very key concept that you were mentioning called valuing cash flow. I would love to have you explain kind of what we're discussing before the podcast and what that is and what investors should be looking for.
Sure. I think, and thanks again for the time. And for those of you who are watching today, thanks for taking the time. We hope to cover a lot of things that are meaningful. So one of the things that I've noticed is a lot of people coming out of corporate America, they're looking for income to replace the income from their job. And so they're looking, for lack of a better term, to jump from a lily pad to a similar lily pad. And there's nothing wrong with that inherently. But what I've found is they might be missing a big part of the equation or a big part of the picture. And the difference is the value of cash flow versus, the value of the cash flow, the assets that they're buying are producing versus cash flow as the value that they seek. And that's a bunch of gobbledygook that doesn't make any sense. So that's the whole point and why we, you know, go through this. So in short, I think it's important to understand that businesses, real estate, very similar to publicly traded companies, trade for a multiple of cash flow. Okay, the more predictable the cash flow, the higher the multiple, the less predictable, the lower the multiple. You can also say the riskier, the lower the multiple, the less risk, the higher the multiple. So in terms of commercial real estate, it's no different. There's a cap rate. There's something called a cap rate. There's a thousand different ways you can refer to a cap rate or look at a cap rate, but it is also an equivalent of a real estate multiple. So again, you know, your listeners are probably like, okay, still not getting there, you know, more clarity. So we'll get really clear here. So in short, let's just say a property is valued at a 5 cap, just for this example. So if you have a property and we find a way to add $1 a month of NOI, of net income, on a monthly basis, that's $12 a year divided by 0.05, which is $240. So to the cash flow investor who is looking for a dollar, they see a dollar, which is 12 a year. Okay, and you pay tax on that 12 and, you know, so on and so forth. But to the value investor who understands the value of the dollar beyond just the cash flow, that $1 a month is worth $240. Okay, and it's not taxed because it's not realized versus the $12 of income that is taxed. And quite honestly, the value investor who understands the value of the cash flow, not only do they have the 240, but they also have the 12. Now, why does this matter? Understanding this just in simple terms will really define how you approach real estate. So for example, if all you want is cash flow, okay, would you want to go lower cap or higher cap? Would you want to target a higher cap rate asset or a lower cap rate asset? Well, generally people are going to target a higher cap rate asset, the higher cap rate, more cash flow, but back to what we said a second ago, possibly the more risk they're taking and the more unpredictable that cash flow may be. So let's just say they target a 10 cap. Okay. So if they buy a 10 cap asset, so same example, take a dollar times 12 months, you have $12 divided by 0.1, you have $120. So a $1 of NOI at a 10 cap is half as valuable as $1 of NOI at a 5 cap. So not only do I want the cash flow, the dollar, but I also want the type of dollar that's valued to the highest end. And so the reason why this is important, and I'll finish up with this, is, let's say your listeners today, and I'll pick a number. Let's say your listener today has a net worth goal of $10 million. Okay. Or whatever, you can take it however you want. Million, 100 million, you know, you can get the finger up and do whatever you want. Yeah. But the point is, let's just say it's $10 million. So at $10 million, if that's your goal, at five cap, if those are the type of assets you're going to buy, and sustained five cap, then you need 500,000 of NOI to be worth $10 million. You need 500,000 of NOI more than what you have today. And so that's an annual amount. That's a big number. You know, people sometimes are like, ah, it's still too big. Okay, so let's break that into monthly increments. So 500,000 divided by, you know, obviously 12 is, let's just say, $40,000 a month. So you need 40,000 of NOI a month to increase your net worth to $1 million. Still, yeah, not getting there. Okay. So let's say you have a goal of acquiring 1,000 units, rentable units. This could be apartments, this could be mobile home parks, this could be storage, doesn't matter, 1,000 units. So divide the 40,000 by 1,000 and you have $40. Okay. So $40 a month across 1,000 units, you may say, well, that's still a lot. So let's give ourselves 5 years to do it. So divide the 40 by 5, you get 8. So let's put it all together. If you buy 1,000 units and find a way to increase NOI by $8 a year for 5 years straight, you created $10 million in net worth for yourself. Right. So that's why this is so important. And that's not including the cash flow the business is producing. And the reason why I think this is important to cover is it's nearly the way the tax regime is structured, and smartly so, it's nearly impossible to earn yourself rich. So while cash flow is great, capital appreciation or value creation, equity creation, 1,000 ways to say the same thing, is we think more important, and that's what our focus on. Now, I guess lastly, with regard to all of this, so you can kind of start to see the importance of NOI, net operating income. All we do all day long is chase dollars. We try to find different ways where we can add $1, $2, $5, $10. To different properties that we own. That's our entire business. It's very simple. So when you look at all the places you can invest in real estate, if you look back over the last 20 years, the two best performing asset classes for the purpose of NOI growth has been number one, self-storage, number two, mobile home parks, and number three, multifamily. Those are one, two, and three. So if you took away storage and mobile home parks for me, I'd do multifamily in a heartbeat. Because that's the one, two, and three in terms of NOI growth over 20 years. So that's why we picked mobile home parks and storage, is the NOI growth characteristics. And now that you kind of can see the value of that, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. And I think that's huge to our investors, because a lot of investors are seeking cash flow, and they preach and hear cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. But I think your breakdown of what that value is and what that return will be, I think, is a huge piece of it, because, and especially in the market cycle today, we're primarily focusing on the multifamily asset class. It's harder and harder to get that cash flowing asset, the true value add. You're seeing a lot of deals that come across as just throw some new paint on it and you got this inherent value add. But I think it's important too, and we stress to our investors, yes, you have that cash on cash piece, but you also have that value add piece that make up that IRR piece. So I think that's super huge and just a huge paradigm shift to people and a lot of people in the space of providing that the value is exponential. And even if it's a lower cap rate, if you, that $1 has so much more of a massive impact than if you were to go into a more cash flow. And we've seen it too in the more tertiary markets, they can be even harder to increase the value. So you're really dependent on that one source of cash on cash and making sure NOI. So that adds a little bit buffer with your investments. One thing I wanted to ask with the mobile home, I know you said adding a dollar of value. What have you seen with those strategies for the manufactured home housing communities and the self-storage? I guess, what are those ways you implement the dollar piece to your business strategies?
Yeah, so great question. And I'll submit to you, we're not a hammer to a degree where everything's a nail. In that it's just the same every day. Every property is a puzzle, and it's a different puzzle. So there's similarities, there's commonalities, but really every asset is a different puzzle piece. And that's the fun part. That's why we wake up and do this every day. We love puzzles. And so in short, I'll give you a kind of some examples. So we just bought a storage facility about a year ago in Katy, Texas, which is a submarket of Houston. And to make a real long story short, it's a three-story facility called Mini-Use Storage Katy. And the top two floors were not climatized properly. The builder, they had this idea that it was really, it's obviously not functional as we sit here and talk about it, but somebody thought it was a great idea. But they had these giant fans. I won't tell you the name of them because it's kind of offensive, but they had these big fans that are horizontally installed in the wall. And this is Houston, humid, hot Houston. And so they thought that by blowing air horizontally through the second and third floor respectively, that fast moving hot air would somehow equal cool. And it didn't. It just meant fast moving hot air plus the fan noise. And so anyway, long story short, nobody wanted a lease on the second or the third floor. The ground floor was climatized properly and was fine. So we bought it, we took out the fans, we properly climatized it. And I think at acquisition, off of recollection, I think we were around 60% occupancy. And now we're over 80% occupancy, and we've owned it for, you know, roughly a year, just because we, you know, cured an issue that was a barrier to occupancy and revenue and NOI. So that's one example. On the mobile home park side, there's a, you know, in short, you know, what makes mobile home parks, trailer parks, as people refer to them as, is just garbage everywhere. You know, there's just disorderly, you know, upkeep of one's yard, you know, stuff that should be on the inside of the house, on the outside of the house. And we don't tolerate that. So we manage to a standard because we want to respect, we want your neighbors to have a quality, you know, experience. And so in short, the stuff has to go somewhere. So where would that stuff go? So if we manage and we say, manage the property well and say, hey, the garbage has to go, or the toys and treasures or whatever you refer to them as, they have to go. We will then provide a place for them to go, which is storage. So we provide on-site storage at our mobile home parks, that's a line item of revenue. We do, you know, cable rights, which is a line item of revenue. We do covered parking. We do, you know, tough sheds. We do all kinds of different things to add line items of revenue. But one of the obvious ones, and I'll give you an example, I'll be there next Wednesday in the Washington, D.C. area. We have a mobile home park there that we bought. And in short, market rents are around $800 for the lot. We don't want to own the homes, just the lot, $800. And the subject property we bought has lot rents at around $550. So we see a lot of opportunity over a very long time to just slowly bump rents up to market over a long period of time. We're not going to go in and raise people's rents $300 a month the first month, but we just see a real long-term opportunity to grow revenue plus add other line items along the way.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge piece of managing it right. When buy right, finance right, and manage right are our three principles when it comes to investing. So the buy right, even though the occupancy there, you knew that there was this huge opportunity to value add by getting the 2 to 3 storage, so going from 60 to 80. Increases your NOI just alone by that value add, and I'm sure there's incremental value adds as you, sure, the life of the asset can grow from. But even to the mobile home parks and the communities, manage right of you could jack the rents up to 300, but you realize that you want to manage properly. These are people. It's a people first business. It's a long term relationship you're developing. So you know you have that opportunity to incrementally, but also too, you're providing more of a service by providing that community basis by providing these storage facilities. So it's just thinking creatively when you're doing these value adds of what can I do to make our residents' lives easier and make it a more communal aspect. So I think those are two huge pieces to our investors and our listeners that when you're thinking about this as a relationship, people live in the Excel spreadsheet and like, if I jack up rents $300 tomorrow, my NOI is through the roof, but in the end, it's the non-spreadsheet things that allow you to create more communities for your investors, your residents, and everyone else in between. So I think those are huge key takeaways that I took from
that. Yeah, no, I agree.
One thing I wanted to hit on too is your investing company, Elevation, is a fund. So why did you guys decide to do a fund instead of the raising for single investments?
So we've done that. So the first, you know, first 5, 6, 7 years, my wife and I were building our portfolio. We did it for ourselves, by ourselves, our capital, our credit, that kind of stuff. Then we did a couple of deals that, you know, were kind of one-off syndication, single asset, you know, multiple or one or more investors. But really we started the fund model in 2010 because we saw an opportunity to buy quite a few assets. And we thought the fund structure from a diversification standpoint, it allows one investor to invest in one vehicle with multiple assets. And so as we do it today, we've even grown the size of our funds, and strategically so. So we're not trying to raise any more money. We're not trying to raise money at a quicker clip year over year. But what we are doing is we're keeping our funds open longer. So they're bigger by virtue of time, not by effort. We're not trying to get bigger. The reason for that is you have a better balance sheet. And the better balance sheet you have, the more options with regards to debt that you actually just have far more options than a single asset and a single asset balance sheet. So I guess the high note is, you know, with an investment of $50,000, somebody can spread that investment across, you know, potentially 30 assets, you know, potentially 12,000 doors, rentable units. So for asset class diversification, mobile home parks and storage, geographic diversification, right now we're in 10 states in this fund, and then a better balance sheet. Those are some reasons.
Gotcha. Now that's a huge piece. And I know we've discussed it internally because even too, I'm sure like you said, but the longer the fund, the less you're not chasing dollars throughout every deal that comes across. You're just casually having it longer opened, accumulate more cash and easily deploy it. And especially given this market cycle, it's harder and harder to always be chasing the dollar. So especially are you seeing that, you know, with this correction looming or anything like that, is that another drawing point that you can say, hey, everyone, dear investors, this is the longer term strategy because we can hold this for longer assets and longer diversifications?
Yeah, so I guess we're longer owners of real estate. We have been for quite some time. Our strategy is to buy really good assets in primary markets, class A for storage and 3.5-star or better for mobile home parks and good markets, and then hold them for a very long time. So we're not really modifying our strategy at all based on what may or may not happen. And I have my views and my best guesses of what might occur, but no, we're not modifying our strategy, but we are long-term owners of real estate.
When you say long, how do you define? I'm an accountant at heart, so long-term can mean a year. Some people it's 3 years, 5 years. What do you deem long-term?
Well, I would say longer term than that. So long term. We've done quite a bit. I'm 39, my wife's 37. And one of the things we think we bring to the table, which is value, is the desire to do this for many more years. And so with regard to what I just said, we want to buy good assets and good markets. And within the fund structure, what that looks like is, we make monthly distributions of income. We want to refinance the assets somewhere around year five. Ideally return all capital to investors. That could be, maybe year four, year six, somewhere around there. But then once we get investors to a zero basis from a capital account standpoint, once they have all their capital out, they still own the same percentage of the fund. They just have no investment. And so, at that point, to a degree, they're at an infinite return with little to no risk because they have no capital in the fund. And so what we want to do is allow them to participate in or exit at discretion. So, how that could work is there's a lot of different options and we have a lot of options, but one particular one could be we could value the fund based on a third party valuation, go to each investor and say, here's your share of the value, here's what your units are worth. And then the next question is, what do you want to do with it? Do you want to stay in and defer your tax gain and continue on with these assets? Or do you want to exit, pay capital gains? Do you want to do a little bit of both? What say you? So we want to give investors options without obligating them to any which way.
Gotcha. And I think a huge point that makes your strategy stand out is if you have a lot of different exit strategies. And I think it allows, even though if you can overwhelm investors, if you have a ton of options, but if you can just say, we have several different exit strategies that allows for the most return for you guys, it allows clarity and calmness to them and allows them constant communication. And I'm sure those monthly distribution checks is always a good sign of communication when they're getting paid.
Yep, exactly. And I think to me, most importantly is you pick. It's not we're making a decision in our boardroom and, we'll send you a letter and tell you what we decided for you, knowing full well that it will certainly not meet everybody's you know, wishes. So you pick for you. We like that a lot.
Generally, do most investors stay on board as is, or is there some that liquidate out?
You know, we're really upfront about that. So I'll have people, you know, occasionally ask, you know, is this something I can get out of? And I'll just say, if you think you're going to get out of, don't get in.
Once they get their shares appraised at that point in this, like,
oh, I see. I see. So at the 10 year mark, this will be the first time that we've done that model. And fund one, our first fund has gone full cycle. And there was a pretty good number of investors in that fund that did not want to exit, you know, but we, you know, that was the way it was drafted. So,
yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, congrats on fund one going full term. I know that's like a 10-year process that you got to celebrate once you get to. So that's an amazing feat in itself. And it's always a good sign when the investors want to stay on board even longer. So that's amazing.
Yep. It was great.
Given the state of the market, I one thing I wanted to hit on too is the refinance strategy. I know that's the longer term hold, but I guess, did you ever think about selling in those five to, you know, selling or has it always been refi with your longer term holds?
So we generally want to refinance. The only, you know, really the only way, the only reason you sell an asset is if the market is no longer viable or the asset in the market is no longer viable, if there's some impairment to your original underwriting. But to a degree, the longer term you hold a good asset in a good market, you know, it should get better and better over time. So you have less and less risk over time, and you know, you get your capital out. So you get to the point where you have an infinite return and zero risk on capital. That doesn't make sense to say, yeah, I'm tired of that. You know, I want to take.
Infinite returns. That's enough.
Correct. with no risk on original capital. Yeah, I'm tired of that. I kind of want to go back to taking more risk. I'm bored. You know, so we, you know, to the extent that the asset is still viable, we think you keep it for the long run, which is why we're, you know, we're buying in markets like Phoenix and Denver and Dallas, Austin, Houston, San Antonio, you know, DC, markets that we think 20 years from now will be quite good.
Yeah. And those are very liquid markets, and too, that even if you did have to exit, there's still going to be a lot of attention. So it continues with the multiple exit strategies if push came to shove.
Right. It goes back to the five cap at the very beginning. We want to buy in markets where we think we have a good chance at having a five cap market on a sustained basis. You know, that doesn't mean we just go buy in Enid, you know, Enid, Oklahoma and go buy something at three cap because that's somehow great. No, you know, Enid, Oklahoma is maybe a 10 cap market at best. You know, some of you are looking up on your phone, where's Enid, Oklahoma?
I was going to say, it's probably has like a bigger city MSA that it's broadcasted as. It's like this huge MSA. That's what I've seen a lot of the brokers now is that it's, yeah, tuck it in the MSA. It's national MSA. It's this MSA. So
yeah, it's people amazing. Drive 200 miles to work. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So given the state of the market, should the investors, I know there's a lot of heat on it, buying, selling, sitting on, I know there's a lot of sitting on the sideline. What kind of strategy do you have given the market where we are now?
Yeah, no, it's a good debate. My wife actually just participated in a debate this weekend with Jillian Hellman with Realty Mogul on this very topic. So it was a great debate. So in short, there's reasons to sell, there's reasons to buy. If you bought an asset not based on the durability of the cash flow, if you look at the asset in the market and you don't think there's a durable path to NOI growth on that asset, and you've experienced cap compression, you know, cap rate may have gone from whatever 9 to 6 or whatever it has gone, I think it's probably a good time to take the risk off the table, take your profit and run. But in our model, where we've always targeted, you know, NOI growth and good assets, good markets with what we think to be durable and sustainable path to NOI growth. If you look at it that way, there's a lot of benefits today. One, interest rates are crazy low. So on mobile home parks today, you can borrow in some cases in the 3% range. Interest rate, you know, 30-year RAM, 10-year fix, non-recourse, fully assumable. So there's really good debt out there right now, which helps. You know, we think the characteristics of mobile home parks and storage will be really good going forward. And then lastly, if you're really looking to buy good assets and good markets, one of the benefits of today is you have baby boomers and you have the greatest generation. You have those folks who are retiring. and they're, you know, wanting to leave their assets, but there's nobody to leave them to. So they're actually selling because today's a good market to sell in. So there's a lot of what I would call trophy assets or legacy assets that may not have been on the market for the last 20 to 30 years, and they're now coming to market because of this market. So there's some good debt options. We think the fundamentals are still good. To your point earlier, you've got to finance right, buy right, manage well, you know, so you don't want to get over your skis, you know, and you got to stick to your guns. But there's a lot to like in this market.
No, I think you hammered on like all the models of the buy right piece. That's huge, because as long as you've got the value add, you're in the long term, you're buying good assets in good markets. I think that's a huge piece that everyone needs to take away of not chasing the NOI, not chasing the cap rate. Like you said in the beginning, that cap rate, that's lower cap rate, could be a good thing to produce value, which is helpful to your investors. So I think that piece, financing, I think, is that the super low interest rates, 30, is that agency debt?
Agency.
So you got the long-term, lowest interest rates in history coming. And then lastly, the managed rate. It's just, if you're executing your business plan, you're getting your investors' money, their returns, you're providing residents and the community a strong asset. I think those are all super grateful pieces of advice for buying versus selling, because everyone has different strategies and we all have the same crystal ball of what's going to happen next. We just can't decide when and where.
Well, and I think the presumption, a lot of people presume that, you know, well, I don't want to buy today because caps are low, cap rates are low. And the presumption is like next year they're going to go up, right? So in short, though, if they do, and I don't think they will, if cap rates go up, it means likely that interest rates went up, which is inflationary. So if we're in a business like storage and mobile home parks, the fundamental question is, can we pass inflation on to our customer? And if you cannot pass inflation on, you're in a really bad business. You're basically out of business. You just don't know it yet. Yep. So at the end of the day, if cap rates do go up, we should see a pretty significant pop in NOI growth.
Yep.
So, you know, so we're fine. We should be fine there. But at the end of the day, I do not think, I don't think cap rates are going to pop. I don't think interest rates will pop. I actually think we're going to be at low interest, low inflation, low corporate growth for a very long time. I think it'll be very different than 2008. Although I do talk to a lot of people who completely missed 2008, weren't even close. And now they're calling 2008 again. You know, they don't want to miss it again. But the problem is, I think they've missed it again.
Yeah. And everyone is casting the vote just to be right. And like, I see, I told you, but I think too, historically interest rates have over 400 years, interest rates have only gone down. I think similar with the macro world economy, all interest rates have been just going down, even negative in many international markets. So I just think, I agree too, that I don't think interest rates, and like you said, if it goes up, no way it's going to pop anyway, but we don't know given the climate, but I'm under the same boat as you are with the assumptions that we have right now. So
yeah.
But one thing I want to, you know, one thing we always ask our guests is, what is the investor pro tip that they can walk away with when it comes to investing in manufactured housing, when it comes to storage, long-term, short-term? What's the one best tip, pro tip that you have for our investors and listeners out there?
Yeah, know what you value. And that's why we started with valuing cash flow. Know what you're going for, know what you value. And then to the extent that you value NOI for the purpose that we discussed, you want to invest in vehicles with sponsors that you believe are buying in the right markets, the right assets, financing them correctly, and then managing the properties well. Because at the end of the day, those dollars sit outside those windows. They don't happen in this office. So my feet need to be out there as often as possible, which is what we do. So we travel constantly. So I think know what you value, and then find a structure and a platform and a sponsor that aligns with what you value.
Yeah. And I think I've told all of our investors, make sure you have that base foundation of what you value. And I think that's just hitting it home even further, because it's like any investment, it's like a marriage. You go through, there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs, but either way, you have that core principle and beliefs that you can fall back on and know that you're going to do the right thing going forward. And then sticking through it will be huge. Ryan, what is the best way our investors can reach out to you if they have any questions or anything?
Sure. Happy to be helpful to anybody who has questions. So my email is ryan@elevationcg.com. They can learn more about us at elevationfund.com. And then my direct line, this phone right here, is 407-602-7662.
Always risky to putting the phone number out there, but appreciate it, Ryan. And there you have it, everyone. Another edition of the RAN CRE Show. Appreciate everyone for joining us. And if you have questions or like to see more from the any more content, visit email us at info@rancre.com. Make sure you leave a rating, review, and comment. And thank you so much, Ryan, for being on the show and providing our listeners with so much value.
You bet. Thanks for having me.